Listen, listen. That was stupid. But no, no.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Gibble gobble.
Yep.
And from Music Video Sins, Barrett Scher.
Hello.
Ooh, that was dramatic.
So, we tried to do this yesterday.
There's a lot to unpack right now.
We did do it. We succeeded.
That's debatable. And we got done with our first podcast back in the studio, and we're back in the studio again today.
Yeah, we're back in the studio. Yeah.
And we did a whole show. We did a whole game. We did a whole game that Jeremy hosted, and we had an outcome, and everything was great.
What was that outcome?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah, I'll tell you what the outcome was. Let me do a quick recap of yesterday's game that was lost to the ether of the digital ones and zeros. It was a blowout at first.
Okay,
this is the guess the goofs that we'll explain later on. It was a blowout at first. Chris and I were going head to head about guessing the goofs of movies. Chris pulled ahead, and then suddenly in the third round, your boy Barrett hopped back on the train and tied that bitch up. Mm-hmm. Stole one, got one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Round four, I believe Chris stole mine, and I think missed yours.
Mm-hmm.
So he went in with a 1-point lead to round five. The good news is, we both got ours from round five. The bad news for me is that means Chris won. So Chris was the winner of the game that you will not hear.
The bad news for listeners is you'll never hear any of it.
Never will hear this because there is some, you know what? There's probably some parallel universe where we could get these files back.
Yes.
But this isn't the one. This isn't the parallel universe. This is our universe.
This is the sacred timeline, as they say in Loki.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we don't have that show anymore. We have Jeremy talking on his one microphone.
Just him like being silent for 30 minutes and then laughing and then talking for 5 minutes.
I didn't realize you actually recovered my file.
Your second file, yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So it would have been a lot of you out there would have been fine with just Jeremy talking and then hearing faint the background and all that. But we're going to do this again. Jeremy, last night, said, fuck it, I'm going to do a whole new game. And we're here the next day doing it again.
Five beautiful rounds. And let's just jump into it.
Well, let me explain, because we explained it yesterday, but people weren't here yesterday.
No, that's what I mean. Let's jump into the explanation.
All right.
Guess the goofs.
So we're going to do the Guess the Goofs game. Oh, we even had our theme song. Guess the goofs. All right.
That's good.
So
nothing like
so
it.
So guessing the goofs is where our quiz master in this iteration, it's going to be Jeremy Scott. That person is going to go five rounds of movies, one per contestant. So one movie for me, one movie for Chris. The goofs are based off of the IMDb goofs section.
Mm-hmm.
The place where they point out continuity errors and do all the non-funny shit that people think CinemaSins does. Mm-hmm. And points out, anachronisms and stuff like that. Jeremy is going to give us up to four goofs per movie.
Mm-hmm.
And based on those goofs, we guess the movie. If we are correct, then we get a point. If we are incorrect, the other person can steal that point. In the event of a tie at the end of all five rounds, mm-hmm. meaning that Chris and I have the same number of correct identifications of the movies, it is based on the least amount of clues given.
Needed, yes.
So it's like in golf, you want to be as far under par as possible. The fewest shots needed. You want to have the fewest clues needed. In the event of a tie, in the event of Chris murdering me, Chris will be murdering me.
Okay.
So that's that.
I will also tell the listener that I do confess that yesterday's Lost Forever Guess the Goofs clues were a little tougher than when Barrett hosted the first edition of the game. And I will also admit that I probably swung the pendulum a little bit back the other direction when coming up with the goofs for the second round of the game, because I didn't want the reputation as the guy who never lets people score.
Well,
I
hey,
want
man.
People to score.
You're a defensive-minded quizmaster.
A 4-3 outcome yesterday sounds fair.
Absolutely.
I agree.
So, it was tough but fair.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, who's going first? Are we going to stick with Chris being the first?
Chris will be first.
All right. Just like yesterday, I'm going in 5-year increments on our first two movies, for one for each of you, are from 1990.
All right.
Okay.
Chris, your first goof. In the party scene at the very beginning, if the Tokyo Stock Exchange had just opened, it should be deep at night in L.A., not afternoon.
Okay. Tokyo Stock Exchange. Repeat one more time, please.
Sure. In the party scene at the very beginning, if the Tokyo Stock Exchange had just opened, it should be deep at night in L.A., not in the afternoon.
Okay, let's go to the next one.
All right, the second clue. 1990 movie. When they leave the opera and go to the park, she removes his shoes. But when he starts to lay down, the shoes reappear.
Leave the opera.
What opera is it? I don't know. Is it Tokyo Stock Exchange opera?
There's a party and there's an opera in the scene.
Sounds like a hot ticket.
It does. Go to the next one.
All right, your third clue. At breakfast, after the first night, the arrangement of objects on the table changes between the shots.
After the first night?
Why is that so funny?
Because these are the easy ones.
Oh, I see. Well, I do believe there's a giveaway clue, I tried to put a giveaway clue third or fourth for all of these so that it wouldn't be so impossible. But yes, the first few, maybe I'd just lie. Maybe all I do is lie.
Party scene, an opera scene, and an objects moving scene from the first night.
Yes, at breakfast after the first night.
So this is something that the characters go in knowing it will be a multi-day thing.
Insightful.
Yes.
Insightful.
All right, let's go to the next one.
All right, your final goof. I already am feeling guilty. When she's in the bathtub singing Kiss, she sings the same line twice. I am the devil.
Once again, now, 1990, as we said yesterday, but you guys didn't hear, 1990 is a little bit on the outside corner of our wheelhouse. Now, I mean, we're 90s kids, but 1990 itself is a little bit...
We were all younger.
We were all younger.
Yeah. Like much younger.
Yes. Yes.
These clues sound like they're giving it away, but I'm not sure if I know this movie.
I know you know the movie. I'm not sure the clues did you any justice.
There's a party scene at the beginning. There's an opera.
There's a first night, breakfast, and she sings Kiss in the Tub, but repeats a line.
Okay, I'm going to take a guess. I'm not sure if this movie came out in 1990, but I'm going to go with Reversal of Fortune.
Ooh, no, but that's an awesome guess. Awesome guess. Barrett, would you like to try and steal?
I would.
Chris's Guess the Goof.
I would like to do that.
Anyone at home already figured it out?
Hmm.
There are people screaming.
Can you give me a call?
No Googling.
I'll tell you what immediately sprang to mind, but I don't know if that's a series. There's not really a prevalent woman in that, though. I'm going to guess Lethal Weapon 2.
Pretty Woman.
Pretty fucking Woman.
Man, it's been so long.
Pretty fucking Woman.
Yeah.
And there's a prominent woman in that movie.
God damn,
It's been a long time since I've seen that movie.
I mean, that is just such a fucking obvious thing once you hear it. By the way, was Lethal Weapon 2 even 1990? It was 1988.
Lethal Weapon 2 was 1989.
Oh, I was close.
Reversal of Fortune, by the way, was 1990.
Hey!
Nice!
But that, I'm not even sure I would have gotten that with a few more. Even, I mean, the bathtub one.
I remember she's singing Kiss. Yeah. I mean, I forgot that Pretty Woman was 90s.
God, I saw that movie once, and really? I saw it in the 90s. So
really?
Yeah, I haven't seen it in...
Oh, wow.
Oh, that movie fucking rules. It's got Costanza being
a dick.
Jason Alexander's being a dick. Yeah.
All right, we pass the baton now over to Barrett Shea.
All right.
For his first...
1990 movie. Still,
1990
right?
movie, Guess the Goofs. These already look easier than the previous, and Chris is going to murder me. Your first goof, a McDonnell Douglas DC-10, introduced in the early 70s, appears in one of the 1960s airport shots.
Ooh. Oh, no. Would he do it? Would he do it?
I don't know.
Would he do it?
I don't know.
After one clue.
I don't know, but if you're wrong, you're fucked.
Let's go to two. Oh. I'm a pussy. I wanted it.
Pretty sure you're right. In an early 70s scene, Visa and MasterCard logos are on the front door of a restaurant. At the time, MasterCard was MasterCharge, and Visa was Bank AmeriCard.
That does nothing for me.
I know.
God damn it.
I know. You want a third one?
Yes, please.
Young Henry is right-handed, old Henry is left-handed.
I mean, I got to clear my head of this one thing that I'm thinking about. Maybe it's completely wrong.
It's not Flight Plan.
Flight Plan,
which was one from yesterday.
Oh,
listeners.
Jesus Christ! Let me have four. I've got to broaden my
the same
brain.
Truck with the red cab in the front is used in three hijacking scenes.
Well, I'm glad I got that because it's not what I was thinking. I don't think. Okay. MacArthur B-52's Rock Lobster is in the 60s scene. Mm-hmm. And then in the 70s, there's a Master Card when there should be a Master Charge.
And a Visa when it should be Bank AmeriCard.
Bank AmeriCard. Really? Bank AmeriCard?
Yeah, I don't know.
What a fucking mouthful that was. Whatever that bullshit third one was, where it was like salt and pepper shakers or weird. What is it? What was the third one?
Young Henry is right-handed. Oh. Old Henry is left-handed.
Henry. You think it's E.T. too? I'm kidding. And then the last one is the fucking cab of the truck.
Mm-hmm.
Three hijacking.
Mm-hmm. Three hijack scenes.
Three hijack scenes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Young Henry, 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Time.
Mm-hmm.
Things. Fuck. I tell you what popped into my head that's wrong. The Rocketeer.
That is wrong. Chris for the steal.
Goodfellas?
It's Goodfellas.
Henry. The fucking Rocketeer.
Hey.
The fucking Rocketeer.
Listen. That was stupid. But no.
I don't deserve to be in this fucking game.
No. When the first clue came up about planes, uh-huh. I also thought Rocketeer.
Uh-huh.
But then Rocketeer set in like World War II or something
like
that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's what knocked it out for
that
me.
That was a 90 movie though, wasn't it?
Yeah, 90.
I think so.
Okay. That's one of those movies that a lot of people said should have beaten Dances with Wolves in 1990.
The Rocketeer?
Yeah. What, you mean The Rock? Oh, you meant The Rocketeer for 1990. I think it was 91.
Oh, yeah?
I'm not entirely sure about that.
Because I'm around the ballpark, I feel good about it. Fucking Goodfellas.
All right. Are you keeping score still?
I am. It is 1991.
And the number of clues needed and all that jazz?
I am, unfortunately. All right. Goodfellas. All right.
We move from 1990 up to 1995. Mm. Now we're in a little bit of a wheelhouse. Chris is working in movie theaters. Let's see how he handles this one. Mm. Your first clue, Chris. Watson says he's from Santa Maria near Lompoc, pronouncing it Lompoc. If he actually lived there, he'd know it's pronounced Lompoc.
What's the name of the...
Watson.
Watson. Oh, man, this sounds ridiculously familiar and something that I've probably seen a million times. Because that line sounds familiar to me. Yeah, let's go to the second.
All right, your second clue. At Union Station, when the security guard attempts to stop the rollerbladers, film lights can be seen through a window on the right.
Security stops the rollerbladers. Film lights can be seen.
Folks, it's harder than you think. It's harder than you think.
You say that, and most are agreeing with you. But yeah. Then there's one guy out there or girl who's already gotten this, and they're like, it's not hard for me. I got it. This, like, mm-hmm. like that.
As soon as you said Watson, I was done.
Lompoc, Lompoc. Mm. I knew that.
Let's go to the third one.
Third clue. At the end of the film, the main character falls into the lobby pool. Then seconds later, exits to the sidewalk, but is no longer wet.
What a fucker.
That is some evil behavior. You get wet, you fucking stay wet.
That's right. Obey the laws of wetness.
Obey the laws of wetness.
Lobby pool. Fell in at the end of the movie. Phil falls in the lobby pool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lobby pool. Mm-hmm. Ponty pool. Let's go to the next one.
All right, the final clue. Huey actually blows his cover for pretending to be deaf in front of Mr. Smith and gets away with it. When Smith tells Huey that he remembers a shoe shine used to cost 2 bits, Huey responds with a head nod and a slight grunt.
God damn, I know I've seen this movie. Oh, man. Barrett's over there like, I know what this shit is.
He's doing that. I'm hiding my shit-eating grin face.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So Lompoc, lobby pool, fake deafness.
I should get more dramatic as we go, which would just be more annoying to the person trying to
how long give me a timer here so that I'm fine man
take your time.
You don't have to hurt. You don't have to hurt. All right, so
I'm only doing silly noises for the audience, not to try and fuck with you. I'm certainly not.
I don't want to give away. I know a line from this. I know how the actor is acting in this scene. I don't want to give it away to Barrett because I'm. Oh my god, there's a part. Okay, so let me just think for a second. Sorry, you guys want to like talk amongst yourselves so that there's not dead air. But
sure. It's not Tower Heist, is it?
Yeah,
I'm not going to be telling you those kinds of things in this talk. But hey, how about that sport ball team?
Yeah. Did you see Scherzer get the treatment? Girardi, so the Phils were playing the Nats last night.
Didn't see it.
Scherzer's pitching. It is Scherzer, right?
Yeah. Well, don't ask him. He's thinking.
Scherzer was pitching, and the coach for the Phillies, Joe Girardi, thought he had some stick-em.
Oh, nice.
And so he had the umps check him once, and then he had the umps check him twice. And on the third one, Scherzer pulled off his belt, like opened his pants, took off his hat, took off his glove. He's like, fuck you, dude. Search me.
That's
I don't
awesome.
Have anything.
That's awesome.
Girardi ended up getting kicked out of the game. It was funny as hell.
That's excellent.
This kills me that I'm going to have to give this one over to Barrett, but I don't even have a guess. I've seen this movie multiple times and I just can't think of it. So
all right,
go ahead.
That is incorrect. Barrett for the steal.
Let me think about it. Okay, so just real quick, a recap. There is the Poughkeepsie
Lompoc
Watson is saying that's yes. where he's from.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. The second one is
rollerbladers.
Rollerbladers.
At Union Station, when the security guard attempts to stop the rollerbladers, film lights can be seen through a window on the right.
Yeah. Okay. Rollerbladers. Of course. I mean, that's such a 95.
Yeah. Every movie in 95 had rollerbladers.
And then the third is
the main character falls in the lobby pool. Seconds later, exit to the sidewalk is no longer wet.
Okay. No longer wet. And then the fourth one is the
Huey actually blows his cover for pretending to be deaf in front of Mr. Smith and gets away with it. When Mr. Smith tells Huey he remembers a shoe shine used to cost 2 bits, Huey responds with a head nod and a slight grunt.
Is it Virtuosity?
No.
Okay.
It's Nick of Time.
Nick of Time!
Okay. I have not seen that movie multiple times. The movie I'm thinking of is not this one.
The shoe shine was what I was trying to give away there with the fake deafness.
Yeah.
Because it's...
Virtuosity was 95, though.
It was Rock. The guy that played Rock.
Charles Durning.
Durning.
Yeah.
Is in the deaf shoeshine guy.
No, there was some movie... Actually, I took your goof as something that in the movie gave away his cover.
Oh.
I took it as a fact, and I was thinking of this movie because there's a movie where a character's like, I'm sorry, man. My ears, and the guy is, I don't know what movie this is.
Oh, I know what you're talking. Yeah.
And it turns out that either he wasn't deaf the whole time, or he was, or the guy just decided not to give a fuck anymore, and he beat him, I think, after he said that.
That's interesting, because I saw Nick of Time fairly recently, and it's just, remember when you said these were going to be easy?
Yes, I do. And now it's your turn.
All right.
You're round two, 95, 1995 right? film. An egg is thrown at the window of a car outside the side entrance of the school. A second later, the egg is gone.
Oh, fuck.
There should be an egg continuity girl on the set of every film.
It should be.
And there wasn't on this one, clearly.
Outside of the school?
That's correct. Actually, outside the side entrance to the school.
To the school. An egg is thrown at the car. At the car.
The car.
Gotcha. Okay, let's do two.
The ship travels from Hudson River to the middle of the Long Island Sound in an impossibly short time.
Number three, please.
The vault guard at the bank radios his captain during the break-in. However, the person who replies is wearing a lieutenant insignia on his collar.
Barrett has stood up.
It's possible I'm incapable of doing anything but giving hard clues. It may just be wired into my DNA.
He might have it. School.
He's stressed.
School?
Scratched.
Egg. School egg. The second one, what was the second one again?
The ship travels from Hudson River to the middle of the Long Island Sound in an impossibly short time.
Yeah, well, there you go. And then there's a vault captain, vault lieutenant
guard. The vault guard at the bank radios his captain during the break-in. However, the person who replies is wearing a lieutenant insignia on his collar.
Of course he does. Let me get the movie that I'm thinking about in my head. 95, right?
95.
Okay, give me four.
The second body in the dump truck in the aqueduct is missing.
School, egg, Hudson River to Long Island, right? Vault guard, second body.
Interlinked.
This is going to be another guess. I don't think any of us have known right off the, well, except for Goodfellas, right off the bat. I'm going to guess the score.
Christopher the Steel?
There's two movies going through my head.
The score was 2001.
It's a good movie, though.
It is a good movie.
I'm just going to go with the usual suspects.
It is Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Oh, shit. That's right.
Interesting.
The school. Yeah, that all makes sense. God damn it. I've seen that movie 100 times.
Well, I had to be careful on the clues there because there were many that would have given it away.
School.
Like,
guard.
Sam Jackson's name is Zeus.
Yeah.
And like half the goofs say Zeus.
Mm-hmm.
I can't use those.
Yeah.
Second one is Long. They go to Long Island?
The boat
that they explode out in the harbor.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, I got you. And then what was the last one again? I'm sorry.
The second body in the dump truck in the aqueduct is missing.
I got you. That's where they, yeah. Mm-hmm. I got you.
There I was hoping the aqueduct would tip it over.
The thing is that there's that whole aqueduct scene in Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah.
All right.
Score.
Where do we stand after two rounds, Barrett?
1-0.
This might actually be harder than the last one.
I am an asshole. All right, here we go. We jump 5 more years to the year 2000.
The year 2000.
Chris, your first clue. The tattoo on Richard's arm disappears in several shots after the tattoo is given. It's there, then gone. Then reappears.
It kind of is implied by the first sentence, right?
That's why I love these goofs, man. There's no stone left unturned.
So just so I'm clear, it's there, and then it's not.
Gone.
And then it's there again.
All right, let's go to the next clue.
The second clue. At about 16:30, I believe this is in movie time.
Mm-hmm.
There is a flash monsoon. As the camera pans, we see a picnic table in a sunny area come into view.
Okay. Third clue.
I think he's circling it. When Sal says, "Come with me," to Richard after waking him from his nightmare, her lips only move once.
I'm going to go for this.
No, don't. I think I have it.
I could be totally wrong, though, but I'm going to risk it.
Oh, awesome.
A Perfect Storm.
Oh. No.
It's not correct.
All right.
Okay, I can get the fourth. We've never done this before, but can I get the fourth clue? Or do I have to steal at this point?
I don't know.
I feel like I should probably steal at this point.
Yeah.
I think I got it.
All right.
Let me go through them again. Richard has a tattoo that was there, and then it's gone, and then it's back there again.
Yeah.
What was the second
one? At about 16:30, there is a flash monsoon. As the camera pans, we see a picnic table in a sunny area coming to view.
Yeah.
When Sal says, "Come with me," to Richard after waking him from his nightmare, her lips only move once.
The beach.
It's the beach!
Yeah!
He tied it up, folks! He tied it up! Barrett is entirely too invested in this game.
I'm so sorry. I just wanted to get one.
Entirely too invested.
What was the fourth one, by the way?
The final clue would have been, after the shark attack, there is a large trail of blood on the beach. Then, all of a sudden, it's pure white again.
Okay. I've actually remember seeing that. Sorry about that, Chris. That is
a movie I love watching two-thirds of the way through, and then I just flip away.
Oh, it goes off the fucking rails. It goes off the fucking rails. I finally something clicked on that one.
I would not have gotten it on the fourth clue.
Well, it's such an innocuous movie, especially a Danny Boyle movie.
Are you ready, Barrett?
Yep.
For your third, and this is your 2000 movie.
2000.
There's a John Deere Model A or B tractor in the shop. These tractors did not begin production until 1934. The sheet metal indicates the tractor is a 1939 or later model.
Indicating that this is, like, that's an anachronism? I'm sorry. Can you read it again?
I'll read it again.
I guess I'm not really.
Because I will not be able to give you more information.
Okay.
There is a John Deere Model A or B tractor in the shop. Okay. These tractors did not begin production until 1934. The sheet metal indicates the tractor is a 1939 or later model.
Who the fuck found this goof? Who the fuck is looking at that? I don't know. That sheet metal right there. That ain't the 34 model.
That's right. Exactly.
Yep. So I'm telling you, that's why people are wrong when they think that we are these people.
You are the ball lickers.
Yes.
The one to lick the ball.
Let's go to two, please.
Two clue. Several scenes supposedly depicting late afternoon sunset show beautiful red skies over the ocean. However, Savannah is on the East Coast, and the sun does not set in the east.
I'm going to go through, No, I got in my head again. I got into Rocketeer land.
What kind of land is that?
It's a bad land.
I don't know. Land. I don't know, but there is Jennifer Connelly is in that land.
All right, let me get out of my head. Go on to three, please.
The second day of the match is a Sunday. The barbershop is open and the father is working as street sweeper, both unlikely to occur on a Sunday in the 1920s in the South.
Savannah.
He's working on it.
And that's a Sunday.
He's chewing it.
It's a Sunday. And
does it have a juicy center?
I'm going to ask. He doesn't have to answer. I'm going to ask him if he knows if I've seen this movie. Is that okay with you? I don't know
it's
why
fine.
I'm putting
I mean,
my
I mean, it's fine by me.
Up.
He can answer or not.
Okay. Do you know if I've seen this movie?
I have no idea. Okay. And I did know, I would not answer truthfully.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I just mean that would give you an advantage.
Well, but, I mean, but if honestly, I haven't seen the movie, then I haven't seen the movie, but okay.
Right, but I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Okay.
I certainly would not try to pick one that you haven't seen.
And then the sheet metal
stumper.
On the fucking John Deere. Okay. All right, let's go to number four, please.
The final clue. There are many infractions of the rules of golf throughout the movie.
Okay, let's go through 2000. Thanks. This is what I was thinking, and that's why I asked, because we had a conversation fairly recently. The Legend of Bagger Vance.
It is The Legend of Bagger Vance.
Okay, we had a conversation recently about how I hadn't seen this movie, and you were like, oh, yeah, you should see this movie.
I vaguely remember talking about the movie. Okay. I did not remember you saying you hadn't seen it. That's impressive, though, that you get it without even...
Well, I mean, I was thinking 2000 golf movies. It's either that or, like, that's the only...
Greatest game ever played.
Greatest game ever played was the one that I was thinking
about.
Could
have been one of those. All right, Chris.
Hang on. Okay.
So hanging
that was
on.
Round three. I have improbably taken the lead. Again, in 2000 movies for some reason.
Again, in 2000 movies. And now we are ready for 2005. Chris, your incoming clue. When Lisa offers the book to the old woman in the front of her, she's holding the book right side up. However, when the woman takes the book, it's upside down. But a few shots later, it's right side up again.
As they do. Lisa, book, let's go to the next one.
When Lisa tells Cynthia to put her code into the computer, she says, _ L. Reissert. However, on the computer screen, it shows as L_ Reissert.
Oh, naughty girl.
Inverted the L and the underscore.
Why is this boner? Let's go to the next one.
All right. When Lisa stabs Jack in the throat with the pen.
Oh, shit.
She is seen stabbing it in and pulling it out. Yet in the next scene, the pen is still in Jack's throat.
Jesus Christ.
I am Jack's throat.
It started off so nicely. She gave a book. She put in a password. Now she's stabbing someone.
Oh my God.
And she stabbed him repeatedly in the throat. I'll be damned. Let's go to the next one.
All right.
When Lisa is being chased through the airport and falls, she gets up and runs right. But in the next shot, you can see that she was supposed to run left to get to the train.
Yeah, this is Red Eye.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me? You fucking fucker. You fucking fuck.
Barrett has left. Jesus. So some little background in yesterday's 2005 question, which ended up being flight plan. Barrett answered Red Eye.
Only other airplane female centric based.
And I stole flight plan. And today, Jeremy has made Red Eye an answer.
All right. That's not right at all.
Oh, man. At least one of them had to be a reference to yesterday. I mean,
I do remember stabbing Cillian Murphy in the neck because he puts the scarf around.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like,
Yep.
That's good shit.
Mm-hmm.
Fucker. God damn it. I'm going to lose these files, too.
All right. Asshole. You're 2005, Barrett. Are you ready?
Yes.
In the first flashback, there are several people standing on the college stairs. In the next shot, everyone is sitting down on the stairs. And if you have a guess from that, then I will eat my hat. No, if you have a correct guess from that, I'll eat my hat. You can make any guess you want.
If the air is toxic, why are you wearing a mask?
Your mask didn't help you?
Next one, please.
All right. Throughout the walkie-talkie exchange, both characters fail multiple times to key their mic, yet the squawk sound still plays.
Squawk sound?
Squawk sound. Get off my sack. I said an extra T. It's not easy.
You're
what I
expert.
Just did.
You're an expert narrator, man. You're an expert orator.
Throughout the walkie-talkie exchange, both characters fail multiple times to key their mic.
Key their mic.
Yet the squawk sound,
still
plays.
There's a flashback, and there's this fucking guy. All right, number three, please.
At the Knicks game, the people in the crowd in the background change in between shots.
Knicks game. Number four, please.
When his shirt gets caught in the taxi, you can see that she is holding on to the shirt as the taxi drives away.
Fucking Red Eye, you motherfucker.
You should be thanking me that I didn't give that to you and end up having stumped you with it.
I would have gotten that shit. Well, no, I wouldn't have, because I would be like, he's not going to do Red Eye. There's no fucking way. Oh, all right, man. So we got in the flashback, the people on the stairs are standing up and then sitting down.
On the first flashback, are several people standing on the college stairs.
Yeah.
In the next shot, everyone is sitting down on the stairs.
Yeah, they are.
Throughout the walkie-talkie exchange, both characters fail to key their mics multiple times, yet the squawk sound still plays.
So there's probably multiple flashbacks.
At the Knicks game, the people in the crowd in the background change between shots. Yeah. When his shirt gets caught in the taxi, you can see that she is holding on to the shirt as the taxi drives off.
Are you substituting pronouns for names? Okay.
Occasionally.
But sometimes they're just in there.
Watson was in there. And
I see.
With Ghost yesterday, we had Sam and Molly. Yeah.
And
I should have left out Syl, because that's what gave
species
away.
Certainly left out everything that would be identifiable about this shit.
Yeah, I could tell you her name and it wouldn't help you.
Her name, who's holding the shirt.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is, her name is in the goof, and I did pronoun it.
I got you.
But it's not It's not, there's no good reason for me to have pronounced it. It's
2005
not,
movie.
Her name's not Queen Latifah or something really giveaway.
Flashback. You got me rocking back and forth. Chris is going to take a commanding lead. Here, I got it all bonerific about one fucking steal, and it's going to bite me in the dick.
Oh, boy. 2005. What a bad year.
What a bad year for
got,
film.
Got married in 2005.
Mm-hmm. Not bad. Yeah, I ramble through these 2005s quite a bit, and
All right, hang on one more second. Flashback. This. No, that's not even in New York, you fucking idiot. I'm just gonna guess Match Point. It's not bad.
It's not, Chris.
Two movies have gone through my head during these questions. And because we had Red Eye, I'm thinking of another connected movie from this last one.
Oh.
But I don't know. I don't know. And I'm thinking of an obscure movie that you may have seen 40 times. The walkie-talkies make me think it's not the obscure one, though. And I'm going to go with Miss Congeniality 2.
Oh, no. I wish I'd have thought of that. It's not that.
The other guess, which doesn't count, was Bedazzled.
No.
Oh, Bedazzled or Bedeviled?
Bedazzled.
Bedazzled. Bedazzled. I actually thought about Bedazzled, too. Mm-hmm.
If I told you her name was Sarah, would that help you at all?
No.
It's Hitch.
Oh, Hitch. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I was thinking Bedazzled, too, because Brendan Fraser is the... Is that what you're talking about? The plays, Elizabeth Hurley and
it's Elizabeth Hurley and what's her Brendan name Fraser. From AI? AI the mom from artificial intelligence.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember her name right now. But she's a reporter and he's a he wishes to be a basketball player.
Right.
And he's got everything going for him and he's got the girl of his dreams in front of him and then she sees his dick.
Yeah.
And it's not big.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Was that 2005?
I think it was.
Wow. See, I didn't think that was a 2005 movie.
It could be a little bit earlier, but...
So it was a Hitch, huh?
It was Hitch.
What?
Yeah, Bedazzled was 2000.
Yeah, I mean, Flashbacks and Hitch? I don't remember Flashbacks and Hitch.
Yeah, because he's crying at the girlfriend dumping him in the rain. He's outside the window going, I love you.
I've seen Hitch 1.5 times.
Oh, man.
Okay, but the good news... It's all tied up.
It's all tied up going into the final round.
Last round.
And
all
it's
right.
definitely harder than last time because we ain't getting, nobody's getting four on this one. Nope. We might even get three.
I know. We may have to go to extra innings.
Oh, boy. I apologize.
This is so much easier.
All right, Chris, we're back to you. We've jumped forward 5 more years all to right. the year 2010.
All right.
A pickup truck was shown at the beginning of the movie with a Pennsylvania license plate on the front bumper. Pennsylvania does not issue front license plates.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, no, they don't do that in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania don't fuck around.
No, fuck those guys.
Yeah, let's go to the next one.
Okay, I really thought that one would give it to you.
Yeah, I know.
This one surely will. Observe the trees in the background of the Observe the trees in the background of the film. It was shot over the course of September to November. Hence, there are scenes with green trees, fall colors, no leaves, then green leaves, then no leaves.
Clue 3.
I didn't even wait. All right, we're getting closer now.
You see there's green leaves, and then there's no leaves, and then there's fall leaves.
Fall leaves.
It's crazy.
Back to the no leaves. During the press conference, we see the police vehicle arrive with Connie. Then, when the camera close-up focuses on Frank and Will, she can briefly be seen jogging towards them. Then, we see Connie exit the police vehicle.
Say that one more time.
During the press conference, we see the police vehicle arrive with Connie. Then, when a camera close-up focuses on Frank and Will, she can briefly be seen jogging towards them. Then, we see Connie exit the police vehicle.
What is she doing exiting?
Okay, go to the next one.
Final clue. When he's climbing down from the engine at the end of the movie, Will's hand shows his wedding band. Safety regulations forbid wearing wedding bands and other jewelry due to preventing injuries.
Connie and Will.
Will the and engine. Connie. Connie and Will.
Pennsylvania. Tree colors.
Observe the trees.
Observe the trees. Look, they got the green leaves, then they got the full leaves, and then they got no leaves. Then they're green again.
You can't
the fuck
explain
is up
that.
With these leaves?
It defies all logic.
What was that last one again?
When he's climbing down from the engine at the end of the movie, Will's hand shows his wedding band. Safety regulations forbid wearing wedding bands and other jewelry due to preventing injuries.
Unstoppable.
Ah! Unstoppable!
Ah! I had that one too.
He got it.
Nice one.
He
nice
got
one.
It.
Very nice. I was like, don't do it. It. Don't say it. Don't say it. Don't say it. Oh, nice one. All right. So I got this is for all the marbles right here. This is it.
All
I wish
right.
you would have given me unstoppable, but no, I'll get fucking, you know, fucking
bedazzled.
Dick in the ass.
Yeah.
All right, here's your 2010 final movie, Barrett.
Nurses with dicks in their asses.
Kodak is
volume four.
Do you want the clue?
Sure.
Because right. I have the power to make it harder.
That is what Kodak your girlfriend said.
Is written backwards on a building in the final rooftop scene, revealing use of a mirror image.
Next one, please.
The general salutes James before leaving. The subordinate should salute first.
I'm just going to run through them. Number three, please.
Ivan makes occasional speaking errors in Russian that no native speaker would make.
Ivan? Now, see, I can play this. It's like being the last act in poker. Like, I can talk however much I want to because it doesn't matter if you steal. Ivan and Russian general saluting shit. Ooh. Oh, rooftop Kodak. Okay, number four, please.
The closing credits show Highway to Hell as being written by Young and Johnson. Correct credit should be Scott, as Brian Johnson had not yet joined the group.
Yeah, Bon Scott. I'm so glad that finally really Highway to Hell, huh? All right, so we got a Russian guy, we got a general, we got a Kodak. I was thinking Red Dawn, the remake, but I don't know if that was 2010. I think that was not 2010. Kodak. The fuck was that last clue, man? Come on. The fuck? It's probably like the movie's called Highway to Hell. Well, let's think about it. Let's think about it. Let's think about it.
This is not getting picked up on the mic very well, by the way.
Barrett is like pacing or something now. I think he's having an epiphany.
But is there a general? The Golden Army. I don't know if there was a general, and I don't know if there was any Russian. This is for all the fucking marbles. I'm sorry I'm taking so long, but the 2010 Russian rooftop Kodak. Russian rooftop Kodak. Highway to Hell, Bon Scott wrote it instead of Brian Johnson. How do those motherfuckers sound exactly alike?
I know.
How do you find
right?
anybody that sounds like Bond fucking Scott?
I don't
Scott?
Know. It's the same thing with Journey, right?
Yeah.
I can tell I know! I said I!
It's another Hell movie. Hold on. I'm going to Hell. I'm going to Hell. Hell-based. Devil-based.
You are making me think of my Ride the Bull song that I told you guys about that I wrote.
Mm-hmm. Ride the Bull!
No, that's not how it goes. It goes, Ride the Bull!
Go to Green Man Show!
Ride the Bull!
Go to fuck you up!
That's exactly right.
I'm so glad you remembered that.
Oh. Holy fuck. You know what would be great is if somehow, some way, because of this podcast, AC/DC recorded that song. And they're like, hey, your name's Jeremy Scott, and we have a Bond Scott.
I just know at the end it says, and you've been bucked off when you ride the bull.
Been bucked off. I'm going to lose this motherfucking game because I'm going to go Hellboy 2, the Golden Army.
Christopher the Steel.
Oh, man. I don't know. Let me see if I can go over the clues quickly one more time,
yes.
And then I will give a guess.
Yes. Oh, I definitely didn't accidentally close it already.
It's true, you didn't.
Here
we go. Hellboy 2 was 2008, so I wasn't too far off.
All right, your clues here are: Kodak is written backwards on a building in the final rooftop scene, revealing the use of a mirror image. Ivan makes occasional speaking errors in Russian that no native speaker would make. The general salutes James before leaving. The subordinate should salute first. And the closing credits show Highway to Hell is being written by Young and Johnson. Correct credit should be Scott, as Brian Johnson had not yet joined the band.
Mm-hmm. Probably wrong, but I'm going to go with A Good Day to Die Hard.
No. The only other clue that I could have given that would have made both of you get it, I think, because I actually had five clues for all of these.
Give me one more.
Randy's Donuts. A famous Los Angeles landmark does not have interior dining.
Iron Man 2.
Ah, yes.
You motherfucker.
I honestly
thought... You give him a climbing down from the fucking engine, and
hey.
But Randy's fucking donuts didn't show up in my fucking
Iron Man fans are going to roast you for not realizing Highway to Hell was a closing credit song of that movie. AC/DC.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Tony Stark. AC/DC equals Tony Stark.
How many times have you seen Iron Man
2? Ivan!
How many times have you seen Iron Man 2?
I got your bird.
How many times have you seen Iron Man 2?
I don't know. Three? Two?
And the first one, like a bazillion, right?
Yeah, probably 15, 20.
I will say, by the way, when you were Quizmaster,
yes,
you did the same fucking thing.
Oh. What did I do?
You gave me a bunch of, there's no fucking mountains in Kansas. And meanwhile, Jeremy got like something that was like, the movie is called The Truman Show.
The movie is called The Truman Show.
So, wow.
All right, everybody, it's time to talk about BetterHelp.
Yes, it is. It's BetterHelp. It's online counseling, folks. Look, even though we're back in the studio, the three of us, we love it. We love the camaraderie.
Yeah.
We love the camaraderie. We love the personal stuff. When it comes to interacting with your mental health professional, online stuff is so good, man. You can video chat with them. You can text with them. You have a counseling room, folks. Here's what the counseling room is. At the top right, you get your chat, right? You message back and forth. You're like, hey, what's going on? I found something that I think you'd be interested in. I'm checking on my counselor. All that stuff, right? Okay, you got that. On the middle left, you've got your calendar where you book your appointments. Do you have to go through somebody at the front desk to book your appointments? No.
No.
You have to click a thing, like clicking your seats at a movie theater that you want to reserve. You click that. You click the time, boom, scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is right in there. And then you video chat, you text. It could not be easier to do online counseling. BetterHelp is the way, much like The Mandalorian. This is the way.
It's really important when you're doing counseling to be comfortable, to be not distracted.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to open up. You have to be able to examine yourself. Be honest. Talk about difficult things. So I had a therapist once ages ago that had like a mildew smell
Yeesh.
In his office.
Yeesh.
And it was just strong enough. It may sound like I'm joking. But it was just strong enough that it kept me from fully focusing
yeah, man.
On the therapy session. Maybe for you it's not a smell. Maybe it's sights. Maybe it's strangers in the waiting room. Maybe you don't like driving. Whatever the reason.
Maybe, yeah, getting there is yeah, maybe an issue.
You're more comfortable in your own home, mm-hmm. which means you're more able to open up, be honest with the therapist, and make progress as opposed to being uncomfortable out in some office where it may take more sessions to really get comfortable and open up.
I'm not going to go too long, but you ever been to a gym and you look over and you see the guy or the gal that's like you know, maybe not like a big beefcake or anything like that, but just in good shape. And you're like, man, I want to be like that person. We had a friend write a column recently that explored her journey in therapy, and I'll tell you guys more about this later on, that really made some amazing points and like really showed you how far she's come in her therapeutic process. And I was like, I want to be there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But to get there, you have to start somewhere. So go to betterhelp.com, help.com/sendcast, 10% off your first month. All you do, folks, is you answer a few questions about how you're feeling right now, how things are going, and then boom, you get matched with a licensed professional counselor within 24 hours or so. And it's awesome. I can tell you from experience, we've got multiple people on the team. We've got multiple listeners that have tried it and have really gotten something out of it. Go to betterhelp.com/sincast. Do it right now. If you've been on the fence about it, if you've heard us talk about it and like, it's not for me, and you are having issues with your mental health, do it today. Betterhelp.com/sincast.
So that's something that's going to happen. And also, had you picked first, right? If it would have got, it would have switched.
Yeah,
that's true.
So
that's why I asked, who's going first? Are we going with Chris first again?
Hey, you know what? It was fair. You won by a point again.
Yeah.
Of course, I got 2 points in 2000. Apparently, I know 2000 movies really, really well.
That's your wheelhouse.
And and I got blanked on all of the rest of them. I was like, the beach, fuck. Oh, God. Well, there it is. There it is, folks. Yeah. Chris wins again. Same outcome
Assuming
as yesterday.
We can recover these files when we're done.
Yeah, this is really the first time to all the listeners.
But next time, Chris will be your host.
That's right.
And quiz master. And he will have the opportunity to torture Barrett and I with difficult clues and leaving out of the Randy's Donuts.
This is called the Truman Show. Boy, I tell you what, Randy's Donuts would have done it for me. I would absolutely have gotten it. But yeah, that Iron Man 2, how many times have you seen Iron Man 2?
Twice.
Because you send it?
Send it,
yeah. Yeah, I've seen it twice. I've seen every other Marvel movie probably, except for Thor the Dark World. I've seen every other
and
Marvel
I also,
movie like at least three times.
I also hate that movie.
Iron Man 2?
Yeah.
I do too.
Oh, it's awful. I loathe that movie. Yeah. I avoid it at all costs.
So like all those clues were just going over my head. And A Good Day to Die Hard's 2013, of course.
It's okay. I picked a 2008 movie.
Yeah. So no, I picked Bedazzled to be 2005 and it was 2000. So okay. I was a little off on my game today.
We were thinking the same thing.
Yeah. So
that's all right. That's all right. Hey. Great job, Jeremy.
Hey,
no, those were tough but fair.
Thank you.
Both times.
Thank
especially
you.
Pulling this off. I'm sorry for calling you a motherfucker about Red Eye.
That's all right. I think it was in fun and love and frustration.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. That was a savage fucking move, though, man.
It was. I honestly, that's probably the best thing I've done in like a month.
If I had gotten that, boy, the mental acrobatics I would have gone through if I had gotten that fucking movie.
Is it Red Eye?
I would have been like,
Red Eye? Do Red Eye?
I'd be like Harlan Williams and There's Something About Mary.
Yeah.
Like something glitches.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, no, I can't say it. She stabs him in the neck.
I love how Chris is like, he had the same thing in his head because he goes, all right, this is fucking Red Eye. Like, like, I didn't think you were doing this, but it's clearly this.
Beautiful. No, that was beautiful. You want to run through a couple of questions?
Let's do some questions.
Some questions.
Question. I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
We're having fun. We have fun. Here's the first one. There's a French film called Le Samouraï featuring Alain Delon. As a too cool hitman named Jeff Costello. This character has been the model for countless imitations since. What is your favorite OG performance that eventually became the model for a specific character type?
I don't have examples of people who are like this after this performance, really, because it is unique. But I feel like Alan Rickman in Die Hard... was a model for the more well-rounded villain.
Yep.
We'd been used to Bond villains for a long time and other kinds of
twirling mustaches and shit like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas Rickman is truly smart. But I feel like it, throughout, after Die Hard in 1988, we started seeing more villains like this who were thinking man's villains. Mm-hmm. They couldn't quite get to where Hans Gruber was or anything, but they were modeled on that a lot throughout the 90s. And we started seeing a lot of these kind of things. But there wasn't anybody that ever touched him. That's why, like, nobody that got really close, I guess.
Well, I mean, look at the rest of the Die Hard movies, though. You got Sadler and you've got Jeremy Irons,
mm-hmm.
both of which are in a similar mold, right? They're mm-hmm. trying to outsmart him.
Mm-hmm.
Even Timothy Oliphant in the you know, a step down in the next one is trying to outsmart. It went from going, you know, the bad guys used to be physically matched mm-hmm. or overmatched to the protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
Rickman wasn't going to go head to head with fucking John McClane.
No, no.
You know? He was going to, oh God, you know, he's going to have his bad American accent and try to outsmart him. So I think that's a perfect
example. Just feel like in the 80s, a lot of your, and beyond, like you'll see some villains who have some smarts earlier than this, obviously, but I don't know to the point of where they are this kind of character. And what was modeled, what villains were modeled afterwards.
You know, it's one of them that could come close to Hans Gruber's Joker in Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Because he says, you know, you think I'm going to risk everything in a fist fight with you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's trying to outsmart Gotham, really,
and
Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a good one. I like that a lot.
All right.
Yeah. I would fuck both of them, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I would fuck the Joker. Would you fuck the Joker?
Sure. Why not?
He's a good-looking guy. You wouldn't fuck? He's probably all fucked
he's
up down there.
He's got every disease.
He's all fucked up down there.
I don't know if he's got diseases.
I think he's fucked up down there.
I don't think he's had much sex, but I think he's got every disease known to man. I think he sleeps on a bed of used needles.
That might be right. That might be right.
I don't have anything anywhere near as clever as that. That was a really good answer. I put Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Just mm-hmm. because what's funny is I was watching a commercial the other day for the old show, Western, James Garner.
Love that show.
Maverick.
Maverick.
Mm-hmm. I was watching a commercial. I was on some channel that was going to run a Maverick marathon later, mm-hmm. which tells you my TV habits. The original Maverick, the old show.
Yeah.
And it was showing scenes from the episodes, and one flashed by, and I was like, is that fucking Clint Eastwood? And I went and Googled it, and yeah, it was. Before he was famous as a Western main man, he was a guest star on TV shows like that. And it wasn't but like 5 years later that he was started making A Fistful of Dollars and all these Westerns came. And I just feel like I haven't seen all of them, but I feel like a lot of hard-boiled Western, gravelly voice, anti-hero guys are all modeled off this Clint Eastwood type.
And and his story is pretty much what DiCaprio's is in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh yeah, really?
That was a thing that Eastwood was doing. He was a I don't know if he was struggling, but he wasn't like a star or anything. He was in a lot of these TV shows. And then he couldn't get like real good movies in America, so like he went over to Italy.
Okay.
And started doing all the, you know, Fistful of Dollars and
Sergio Leone
stuff. Yeah, all the Sergio Leone stuff. So that whole thing with, you know, DiCaprio pointing himself out on the TV and everything. I mean, that was him pointing himself out. If you may have read this, that Burt Reynolds was in that episode
that they
basically took him out and put DiCaprio in. So Burt Reynolds was another one of those, like, you know, those kind of guys. But I mean, Burt Reynolds didn't go to Italy or whatever, but like Clint Eastwood, that's basically that's what the story is of Once Upon a Time.
He was playing the heavies in those. Is that what they called? Is that what Marvin Schwartz called them?
Yeah, I think so. Something like that. I don't think he had, I don't know if, I don't think Eastwood had a hit. He didn't
have the apex and then go down.
Right,
and come back
he
up.
Was always down and then he moved up.
Mm-hmm.
But now
he's moving up to his 90s.
He is.
You have another one? You have another one, right?
I wrote down Bruce Lee just because I don't think.
Speaking of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I don't think a lot of. I think he inspired a lot of cocky martial art.
You're absolutely people. Right.
Whereas
absolutely.
I think a lot of martial arts before him was a little more solemn and ceremonial even. And he's the kind of guy that brought this, yeah, come at me, bro. Like the Neo
yeah,
doing the come hither to Agent mm-hmm. Smith.
Or even fucking fucking Raid guy.
Yeah. Rama?
Rama.
Yeah. Boy, I just watched that the other day again, and I had to settle for the English dub version.
Oh, shit.
Oh, that sucks.
It's really, is it really bad? Hard to watch.
I can't watch dub versions
I can't
anymore.
Either.
I mean, I wanted to see the kitchen fight, so I hung with it, but it's hard to watch, man, because nothing matches anywhere.
Even Eat Man is like, fuck you, like I'm gonna kick your ass. And it's the polar opposite of like Jackie Chan, where Jackie Chan is like cartoonish, like, oh, I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight. I'm going right. to figure out a way mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. But Bruce Lee is like, fuck.
Yeah, and I yep. think before that, there wasn't a lot of self-promotion
yeah.
in movie characters or in real kung fu. It was just more of a, we're following a discipline here. Anyway.
I love kung fu movies.
Mm-hmm.
my pick, my first one, is a singular comedic talent that I think has been tried to be copied, like Peter Sellers.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about his work with Kubrick in particular. Lolita, where he is at the beginning and the end of the movie playing a really off-the-wall character, when the rest of James Mason is straightforward, albeit also awful as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Shelley Winters is pretty straightforward. Lolita herself is pretty straightforward. But this guy is just all over the place. He's gregarious, he's taunting, but he's also, in the end, begging for his life.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think, of course, Dr. Strangelove.
Yep.
And you think of, he plays many different characters. He plays Dr. Strangelove. He plays the guy in the fort, and then he plays the president. And his character as the president, even though Dr. Strangelove gets, you know, the main laughs and everything, his character as the president is my favorite
mm-hmm.
because he's just like, Dimitri, look, Dimitri, I can't stop this. Okay, there's no need to use that language. But I think there's a lot of people that have modeled. He's got, of course, he ended up winning the Oscar for Being There, didn't he? He was nominated at least.
Yes, I think he did win, but I'll look it up.
You know, he was in Murder by Death. He had a lot of nuance to him. And I think actors like Tom Hanks, I think actors like Jim Carrey, Bill Hader, Lily Tomlin even have that sort of breadth. Like, Bill Hader's a funny fucking guy. Mm-hmm. But also, if you watch Skeleton Twins or you watch Barry, you can see a lot more going on there. Same thing, obviously, with Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks started off with The Bachelor Party and Splash and fucking, you know, all these in Big and stuff like that. But even in Big, you saw some dramatic undertones.
Mm-hmm.
And then starting in Philadelphia, really, really knocked it out.
Yeah. Peter Sellers was nominated twice for acting, never won. Melvin Douglas did win for Being There, by the way. And he was a nominee for Best Short Subject Live Action Subject, so I guess he directed this.
Was Sellers nominated for Dr. Strangelove?
Yes.
Okay, so Being There and Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, I'll say this. He and Jerry Lewis, I guess, you have to throw in this, but I would put more emphasis on Sellers. Sort of, I think he inspired Eddie Murphy.
Interesting.
Because Eddie Murphy has had that kind.
Roles and stuff like
yeah,
that?
He's yeah, he's never yeah. really had like that dramatic career. He did in Dreamgirls. Yeah, he got yeah. nominated in that. But that multiple role thing yeah. he did in Coming to America, and he did it again in Nutty Professor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there were others who did it great before Peter Sellers, but Peter Sellers is the one that I always think of,
especially
as that
Dr. Strange
archetype yeah. as doing, you know, several characters at once,
because they're so different. And of course, you can't not mention Pink Panther, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
The original Pink Panther is actually really, really good.
What about
the hamburger
Columbo? What about Peter Falk? Like, do we think that he inspired people to do that fake aloof detective kind of shtick?
Probably so. Probably so.
I feel like I've seen that. Like the detective in Talented Mr. Ripley is doing the same kind of
thing where he's like, oh, I'm not really all that smart. You must be right.
Of course. No, I feel like like there's been a million of these.
Willem Dafoe, an American Psycho.
Yeah. Do you like Huey Lewis in the news?
Yeah, I think that, I don't know if Columbo was the first of that kind, but he certainly is the most prominent because he came out during the time of like Kojak and like all these hard-boiled detectives who
Joe Friday.
And then he's the harmless, oh, I'll have a cup of tea and one more thing.
Yeah.
It's good. I do have to mention that Mary Tyler Moore I think was really broke the mold for upwardly mobile self-sufficient women, especially on TV. You know, Candace Bergen and Murphy Brown, Tina Fey in multiple things, but 30 Rock is one. Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I would say Ellen DeGeneres too, especially how her show turned into, you know, really launching her career. So I think Mary Tyler Moore really deserves a lot of credit because I don't think there was a lot of, if any, female led shows besides I Love Lucy in which she's still kind of beholden to her man in that show.
Yeah.
You want to do one more? Come on.
Sure, let's do one
more. Come on. You know, I want to have this discussion. It is maybe our last. When do you consider a group of movies to have moved from a series to a franchise? Now, a little background. I got a wonderful email from one of our listeners that was mentioning how close-knit and wonderful our Discord community is. I know Chris mentions Discord at the end of every show, but you guys on Discord really have a community. We interact as much as possible with members of our team, and somebody posed this question, and apparently it lit a fire about semantics, about how and when and where, what's a series, what's a franchise, what's this, what's that. And I think it's an interesting thought experiment. At what point does a series become a franchise?
After three. Done.
All right, guys.
Next problem.
Yep.
A three is a trilogy.
Hold on. What do you mean? What do you mean after three? Like at
fourth
three,
movie and on.
Fourth movie and on.
You become a franchise. At three, you're a trilogy.
I think it's three exactly because Star Wars was a franchise after it made its third movie. I also think that when people say franchise, they're also including merchandising and
merchandising
and books and other media with that. So Star Wars, I think, was a franchise. Lord of the Rings was a franchise. The problem with Lord of the Rings is that there was only one other. This is going to the fucking Tolkien fans are going to be like, fuck you. There wasn't really anything else in that line of stories from Tolkien himself other than The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. Yeah, there's all the other fucking shit he wrote.
Yeah.
Imagine C.S. Lewis being like, he's got some other fucking shit that he wrote. Fucking J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's that those backstories and everything don't really. They're not franchise material. You wouldn't go out and, like, let's see how much of the Silmarillion that I can make. You know, how many movies I can make out of that?
What is that, by the way? Is that like the genealogy of Jesus?
It's like
an
encyclopedia
like
of Middle Earth.
Okay.
And the there's the other one that he wrote that's a companion. I can't remember.
Is there any narrative structure to the Silmarillion, though?
Yeah.
Not from beginning to end. I think there's narratives inside it.
I see.
But it's more like the Bible of...
Like the beginning of the Gospels where it was like Jesus begat this or begat that.
No, I've never read the Silmarillion, and I don't think it's anywhere near that dry. I think it's just Jesus the history begat. Of Middle Earth in an encyclopedic depth. But I think there's storytelling there.
But I think it officially, I think it became a franchise. See, I guess it depends. Like there wasn't really much more story to say after the Lord of the Rings, Return of the King came out. Except for The Hobbit, which, you know, whatever.
Nobody likes The Hobbit.
Fuck The Hobbit.
Fuck The Hobbit.
No, I mean, nobody likes those movies, right?
No, somebody I don't think does. So. Yeah, somebody does, exactly. Somebody thinks those are the best movies ever made. But then I don't know if this series is finally ever going to get made, but once that series once that became talk of a series, then yes, it became a franchise for sure. That is after the third movie, though, and it's after the sixth movie, if you really want to be technical about it. But I think studios look at something as a franchise as soon as they think they can make multiple movies out of it.
I agree with that.
So, I guess it depends on what we consider franchise. Like, is The Mummy a franchise? It's made, you know, they've made three with Brendan Fraser. And then, well, they've made millions of other Mummy movies before this. Universal has.
Yeah.
Was there a third Brendan Fraser one?
Yeah, it was.
In addition to Scorpion King.
Scorpion King was one off.
Yeah, Scorpion King was a spinoff. And then they made the Tom Cruise Mummy, mm-hmm. which is going to be part of a that was a big question for me.
It's another franchise.
If you've got multiple things based on the same character or whatever, does the one thing count as a franchise, or does it all encompass?
Well, and that's the secondary question. When do you move from being a franchise into being a verse? Like the MonsterVerse,
right?
Or the MCU.
The right? MCU.
Yeah.
And
yeah, at what point was that a franchise? Yeah, Iron Man was successful. Hulk,
once Avengers came out, I think.
You think that was?
But by that point, there had been five movies that had come out. I think.
Hulk was technically first, right? Or the Incredible Hulk,
Iron Man, and then Hulk.
Okay.
And then
Thor.
Thor, Captain America.
Captain America.
Iron Man 2 came out, and then Avengers.
Then Avengers, because that's where Natasha came from. Mm-hmm. Was Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
The aforementioned Iron Man 2.
So the MCU has...
That did not have anything mentioned about donuts.
So the MCU has multiple franchises inside its verse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you're saying. You're like Iron Man's a franchise.
Thor's a franchise.
Yeah.
And that's true, because, they're coming out with different individual movies when they don't really have to. They could just, you know, like,
yeah, look at Thor. I mean, Thor's on its fourth movie right now.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's excluding the three Avengers or the four Avengers movies.
Mm-hmm.
So he's gonna have seven movies that features
him. Do you realize how much money that guy's gotta have? And granted, he works hard, but man, you don't stop and think about how many. You only really think about Robert Downey Jr. because that's where you hear the $50 million price tag.
Mm-hmm.
But you take him out of the picture and you think about how many MCU movies Chris Hemsworth has been in.
Yeah.
How many MCU movies Chris Evans has been in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those guys don't ever have to work again if they don't want to.
No, and I kind of like the cut of their jib, to paraphrase Chris from earlier. Like, they seem to be taking it in stride. Like, Chris Evans doesn't seem like his character in Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Right.
Yeah, he seems like
very down
he's
to
looking
earth.
For little girl good at math movies.
Yeah.
Instead of just like, you know, I don't even know what Robert Downey Jr. I know he's producing the Sweet Tooth.
And he produces that Perry Mason series. He was going to star in that Perry Mason. Yeah, he was going to star in it, but then they told him he was too old, so he produced and they got Matthew Rhys.
Yeah, in the end, I think if it's just movies, three, but if it spawns comic books and then other books and toy action figures you could almost consider Cars a franchise by the time the second one came out.
Yeah, absolutely.
They sold so much shit.
Absolutely.
Because
that was... okay. Do you think they made more... And I ask this very honestly. Do you think they made more money off the toys than they did the actual movie?
Yes.
Very easily, right?
I think you could say those toys are every movie. When was the last time you went to Disney?
8 years ago?
Everything there is merchandise. The cup you drink out of, the fork you fucking eat your goddamn Mickey pie with. Everything is branded something.
I want some Mickey pie.
Made with real mice.
I'm just saying, they don't miss an opportunity to sell you merchandise.
Yeah.
I bet you almost every Disney movie makes more in merchandising than in box office.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, man.
That may not be true for every studio, because not every studio has Disney complexes around the world.
Sure.
But I bet Disney does, for sure.
Yeah.
Star Wars is only going to get worse that way, too, right? Because think about how much money they're making off Star Wars for the next 20 years at this ride that they've built.
My kid has a baby Yoda.
Yeah. and
it wasn't cheap.
And meanwhile, I would say Taken... probably not a franchise, even though it's got three movies.
There's three, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't, unless there's, you know, you go to Walmart and see Taken, Liam Neeson action figure and everything.
Oh, I want to find those now. Yeah. Oh, dude, that'd be awesome.
Oh, man. And when you push the button on the back, he says, I have a particular set of skills.
Yeah.
You can edit me climbing over a fence six times.
Yes.
That was more Sean Connery.
It was. But I don't know. I don't know if you call that a franchise after three movies, because
I would call Taken a franchise. I would. Because you could probably see some spinoffs of like his daughter. Who played his daughter?
Maggie Grace.
Sub question for this before we finish.
All right.
You think Mission Impossible?
Yes.
Considered themselves a franchise after the second one?
It definitely was, although I'm going to, this sounds wishy-washy, but it was a big TV series.
Before. It was.
So when it got to its third movie, it was long at that point a franchise.
I'm wondering if, like, after the second movie, they decided it was a franchise.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean,
because it took a while to get from one to two. I mean, it took 4 years.
It took 4 years, yeah.
4 years between one and two.
And then it took another six to get to three.
Yeah.
But that's a kind of IP that you would have as a, you know, at TV. It was a big TV show. I think it had like 200 and something episodes or something like that. And then after it made a first couple of movies, I think it's a franchise.
Okay. But as a movie franchise, I think you could probably say that once the fourth one was in development, that it really,
yeah, like
we would consider it a franchise.
I mean, if it, I don't know if it hadn't had that. See, here's the thing. There is a whole generation of people who only know the movies.
Yeah.
And don't know that the,
I don't think I ever watched the show.
Yeah, I didn't either, but I knew it was a show.
My
mom
liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was every bit as much mask ripping off in the show as there is in the second movie.
And the theme was in 5/4.
I think that's an interesting thing. I think it ultimately comes down to not only the movies they've made, but what the people who own that IP consider it. Do they think this is going to spin off a whole bunch of other stuff? I mean, Mission Impossible, if it stopped tomorrow, you know that 30 years, or not even that long now, 10 to 20 years from now, they'd want to make more Mission Impossibles.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because it's a name recognition.
With Cole Sprouse.
Yeah, Cole Sprouse. That's right.
Very nuts. Oh, my God. Fuck Dylan.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, it's much better than Cole Sprouse and not Dylan Sprouse. All right. Well, okay. That's going to do it for this week. Tell us what you think about the game.
First, this tree, this leaves.
The last game was received well by most people, I would say. I think I had one dissent on Facebook. I can see that if you're listening to this and it's like there's some dead air here and there, you're going to kind of...
I'm going to clean that shit up, baby.
That's right.
You're getting gold. You're getting gold, people. Don't sleep on this.
Yeah.
It's a good game.
Yeah.
And Jeremy was a fabulous quiz master.
All right.
I really, in retrospect, respect the red eye move.
You've come around in about 30 minutes.
Yeah. I don't like it, but I respect
it. Okay, that's good. That's good.
Anyway, keep going to SinCast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter. We're on Discord and we're on SoundCloud. And again, I'll remind, we don't have to give you a link to Discord anymore.
Ooh, fuck yeah.
Because we got the Blue Lion, or whatever the fuck that is.
That's right. The Blue Lion?
Yeah, the Blue Lion.
Rawr.
That's going to do it for this week. It's Chris Atkins and Jeremy Scott, Bear Share. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
Man, on Google, it says Bobby's Dairy Dip, which I don't even know if you've been to.
No, Bobby's what?
Bobby's Dairy Dip. It's a burger joint that's been there forever down Charlotte, right next to Hattie B's.
Okay.
For my money, probably the best burger in Nashville.
Okay.
And Google says, on Wednesdays only, it opens at 9 a.m. Every other day, it's 11. So we were like, fuck yeah, it's meant to be. Let's go. While Jeremy's getting here, we'll fucking go and get some Bobby's Dairy Dip. So we go to Bobby's Dairy Dip, and I see on the window, it says, sorry, we're closed. And I'm like, no! And then all of a sudden, it opens, and there's this girl in there. And I'm like, yay! And she's like, no, we're closed.
And I was like, ah!
Okay, so during the pandemic, my wife and I wanted to eat at this, it's this bistro, like 10 miles away, and we weren't sure if they were open in the pandemic or not. Mm. So my wife calls, and it rings, and rings, and rings. And so we're like, they're not open. We hang up. 2 minutes later, my wife gets a call, and it's the lady from the restaurant, the bistro, and she goes, sorry, we're closed.
Oh, what? Oh,
what?
I was like, why did you call us back?
Yeah.
You just gave us false hope.
Oh, yeah, no. Just tell me who you want me to fuck.
That's a roller coaster. That's like what happened with Bobby's.
Yeah.
Man, I had a second where I was like, one cheese. Oh, we're closed. Fuck.
And then you had to settle for a McDouble.
No. No. Because on the way there, we passed Hugh Babies.
Oh, you went to Hugh Babies.
And so I asked Chris, like, on the way, I was like, you want to pull an audible and go to Hugh Babies instead? He said, no. He said, nay.
Nay.
He said, nay.
Nay.
We're going to Bobby's. And I was like, you know what? You're right, Chris. We're going to fucking Bobby's. So after being rejected and then accepted and then rejected again from Bobby's, we're like, fuck it. Hugh Babies.
And you went to Hugh Babies. Boom, ba-ba-dum,
ba-da-boom, ba-da-boom, ba-da. Closed until 11.
Uh-huh. This is a long story just to tell me you ate a McDouble.
And then we went to McDonald's. Mm-hmm. It's such a step down from one of the greatest burgers in the city.
It is.
To a very, very good burger.
Yeah.
To fucking McDonald's.
Similar story. My wife and I went out looking for brunch on like a Saturday. This was like 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And the regular brunch place was closed for construction. And so we're like, okay, well, maybe we'll go to this other place. And there was a line out the door.
Oh.
And we were like, oh. And we were getting more and more hungry and exacerbated. And we ended up having McDonald's sausage biscuits.
Oh no.
Mm.
It always ends with McDonald's.
It does. They're always open.
He's got a point.
What is our favorite movie of 2021 so far? Spontaneous was last year, right?
Yeah. Of the movies I've seen in theaters, Spiral would not be there.
Yeah.
Conjuring. Well, I didn't see Conjuring in theaters, but that would not be up there, obviously. Quiet Place.
I mean, it's fucking...
Quiet Place 2.
Almost July.
Yeah, Quiet Place 2 would be up there, probably.
And
then In the Heights.
Oh, yeah. I think probably In the Heights is probably my favorite so far. There really hadn't been a lot of good stuff, has there?
No, but I think that it's been there's just sort of been a holding pattern as to what
Silk Road was pretty good. Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Ah, yes.
Fuck off.
Don't make me laugh.
Coming to America, I didn't see.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be up there.
Oh, Barb and Star. Barb and Star might be my favorite so far.
Still need to see that.
Oh, that. I don't want to make predictions, but I think that's kind of up your alley.
Okay.
Minari came out in 2021, apparently.
No. Well, I guess it did.
I know. Yeah, it's that.
I guess thing, it right? did. Yeah. It's the one. This 2020, 2021 era is where we're going to have to make concessions on what we think, what year a movie came out.
What was The Courier? Oh, I know The Courier. What was The Courier? It was Cumberbatch. Bad Trip was bad. Godzilla v. Kong was bad. I haven't seen Shiva Baby, but I think that's on Mubi right now.
What is it called?
Shiva Baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's the coming-of-age, kind of Lady Bird-ish story about a Jewish girl slash woman, like coming of age.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And it'll get to the dating life, and it'll be like, oh yeah, she dated the likes of this guy, this guy, this guy, Bradley Cooper, this guy, this guy. And like almost every single.
It's like Stefan going through it. It's got everybody.
Yeah.
Dan Cortez.
Yes.
What's up with that?
I don't know. You just said you wanted to see what the dick sees. So
no, well, I mean, the dick. No, the dick sees a lot
of a vagina.
No, the dick sees a lot more than just the inside of the vagina.
Okay, it sees a tongue sometimes. I hope
it doesn't have to. I mean, there's times where you're just playing around and it's flopping around.
My eyes,
if you got a camera on your dick,
my eyes do a good enough job.
Say he's.
It's not that far away. Two and a half feet. Not that big of a perspective change. I just put my face wherever your dick camera is, and I'll see the same
thing.
But
like, you know, okay. I'm trying to explain this properly.
I'm trying to stop you.
Yes, probably 80% is internal penetration of some orifice, right? But the other 20% is just looking out there. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about my own dick. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Bradley Cooper's dick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right.
I want to see what it's seeing.
I would still rather have his eyes and see that. Yeah,
That's fine, too. That's fine, too.
Yeah.
I think Taco Bell near my house stays open until 3.
Mm-hmm. Mine does. And I've done it after poker. I've been there at 2 a.m. And it was fine taste wise. I mean, it's Taco Bell. Mm-hmm. But also, like, the next day I thought about it and I was like, that's probably not a good idea.
I mean, mm-hmm. I eat Taco Bell. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I barely trust Taco Bell, like, at peak lunchtime,
mm-hmm.
let alone, like, 3 a.m. Taco Bell.
I think I went to Taco Bell that was on West End at, like, 1 or 2 o'clock in the
uh-huh,
morning.
Uh-huh.
And I you guys are never going to go to Taco Bell again. I was eating one of the tacos.
Oh, boy.
And there was the plastic lid or whatever for the sour cream or whatever was in the taco.
Oh, that's not as bad as I thought it was going to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, no, all things considered, yeah. It's the best case scenario.
I was bracing for, like, a frog.
Oh, that's happened too.
Are you guys not amused? I mean, impressed? With the,
I am.
Are you not entertained?
We've already mentioned our impressiveness.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted you to mention it.
Yeah, again. Yeah.
Now, I'm pretty sure here we're not going to be quite as stumpy.
Stumpy?
I think there's going to be. I think there'll be a little more success rate.
You know what, though? I've got a record of the last game that we can reference.
I was watching some of Matchstick Men yesterday.
Ooh,
that's
like that
a
movie.
Really good movie.
Yeah, I like that movie. It's Alison Lohman, right?
Yeah. Yeah, love me some Alison Lohman.
What happened with her?
I think she started a family and just decided to stop acting.
Good for her.
Kind of the, what's her name? Phoebe Cates route.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that is a good movie. I like that movie a lot.
Is that a Ridley Scott? Is that a weird Ridley Scott?
It's a Ridley Scott.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh. Man, that guy... He's got some misses, but he's got a lot more hits than he does strikeouts.
He comes out with a movie almost every year, so it's not surprising that he comes out with a lot of misses in addition to real big hits.
Who made the decision on All the Money in the World, by the way? Was that him?
I don't know. I didn't hear. I would assume it was, because Ridley Scott produces all of his movies, too.
That's right.
Scott-free.
And God bless him. I mean, obviously, there was a financial thing. Like, that would not have played very well.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he didn't have to do that, right?
No, he didn't. But he knows also that by keeping Kevin Spacey in the movie, you're losing millions of dollars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think that's where you go into that sunk cost perspective where you're like, well, we've already done it with Kevin Spacey. How many millions do we lose at the box office by leaving him in?
Versus the cost of the reshoots and the Stacey Martin.
Now you're doing Ed Norton Fight Club mouth. If the cost of the recall is...
Ed Norton mouth. Yes. You got an Ed Norton mouth, sir.
You said Ed Norton math, right?
Math.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought you said mouth.
Yeah, because in Fight Club where he's like explaining when they do and don't do a recall.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what it was. I was watching another movie from like the 80s or 70s where they give that same exact explanation about recalls and math. And I remember thinking Fight Club lifted this, but I don't remember what it was.
If X is greater than Y, we don't do a recall.
Yes.
In fact, I might have actually made these too easy this time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to. Now, if we miss it, it's going to be worse.
Yeah, exactly right.
Oh, I'm just sandbagging you.
Yeah, good.
Of course.
Good.
Yeah. Fucking horror, man. I mean, I respect it as a genre for doing the worst thing that you could think of. And there is a lot, like, that's why Jen is so great about this stuff, is breaking down the aspects of it, not necessarily the brutality itself, you know. I appreciate that there are some things that I just can't stomach.
Yeah.
And I think that's the purpose of that genre. Good for horror. Good for horror. Hey, slap him on the shoulder.
Good for hoy.
We did 15 minutes of us jacking off.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
Remember the jacking off?
I remember because I ate the bread.
Why did you eat that bread?
I don't know. It's the game.
Oh man. Oh man. Semen bread.
That's right.
Woosaw. Serenity now.
Woosaw. Is that the Bad Boys reference?
Yes. Okay.
What is your favorite OG performance that eventually became the model for a model?
Yes. We can cut this.
I don't see what the big deal is.
Was it in, it's in Entourage where Turtle goes to this party. And this girl comes up, this hot girl comes up and talks to him. And he goes, he's just like sitting there, he's staring off into space. And she's like, are you listening to me? And he goes, sorry, girl. I don't listen. I don't hang out with 16-year-olds or whatever. And she goes, I'm 21. And he turns around and goes, oh, really? And she leaves because he says that.
I'm just saying. That this was like a Lifetime movie, I wouldn't recommend you watching. Okay. But I watched it.
All right, sure.
Yeah, you did. I watched it.
I don't think anyone's ever pledged themselves to a Lifetime
movie. I didn't
movie
say I pledged
before.
Myself.
Yeah, right, sure.
Yeah.
I said I watched it.
You didn't say that you didn't.
Until they started showing the close-ups of the privates.
Here's a dick's eye view.
Yeah, that's right. What it's like. This is what it's like.